Drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. Marion Frith has a debut novel, Here and the After. It's such powerful and evocative language. It's beautifully written, but it's also a really painful read. Here in the After is the story of Anna and Nat, two broken souls, both with PTSD, struggling to find a place in a world they no longer fit. Anna is the sole survivor of a Sydney terrorist attack. She's stalked by flashbacks and she feels like she can't cope. Nat is a veteran of the war in Afghanistan. He's guilt-ridden and very angry. They have so little in common, yet they have so much in common and they build a friendship. And that is the premise of the novel. Marion joins me now. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you, PK.
Here in the After is being released as, you know, just in the aftermath of Afghanistan having fallen to the Taliban. It makes really the story and its themes very well timed, if not tragically timed. As an author, did you think about that?
Well, I think tragically timed is the thing, isn't it? I couldn't believe it, actually, at the timing of this as this story came out. So as you said, we've got Nat, a young veteran, and he's really struggling with what he experienced in Afghanistan. He's questioning, the point of his service, the futility of it perhaps. And so to have this novel come out as we were watching that horrendous footage of Afghanistan falling to the Taliban, as you said, the scenes at Kabul airport was really quite overwhelming, I have to say. It really was just too sad for words.
What made you want to look at the veteran experience in the first place? What was it about that story that you wanted to get into?
Yeah, I actually wanted to look at the aftermath of trauma generally. I'm really interested and always have been in that notion that, you know, you sit and watch the news, you read the news, you hear from and see the faces of people that suffer, you know, the most horrendous things. And then on we go, the news cycle moves on and what happens to those people. So that's something I've always been interested in. And I decided to look at the veteran experience because I think that is a forever experience, if you like. You know, since time immemorial, you know, we've had veterans coming back from war experience and trying to fit back in. But I wanted to offset that with another character, with a person who wasn't prepared to step into violence, if you like. A soldier has some expectation that they might go through something challenging, but I wanted that offset with a person who had no idea what lay around the corner for them and sort of had the interplay between those two people.
And at the centre of the story is this unlikely friendship, right, between Anna and Nat, and that siege that she's in is a real trigger for him. How did you come up with the idea of connecting these two unlikely people? I mean, she's a 62-year-old grandmother. He's a 35-year-old veteran that carries all this trauma.
Yeah, sort of how did I come up with the idea? I don't know, really, except both these characters took shape, you know, and I liked the fact that they were very opposite in gender, in age, in life experience, in the way they were coping with the traumas they'd been through. And, of course, the trigger becomes Nat sees the footage of Anna being released from hospital, originally being taken into hospital, then being released, and that triggers in him his experience, because he feels that if he'd done what he believed he'd set out to do, which was to stop terrorism in its tracks, to keep Australia safe, she wouldn't have been put in that position. So he's very upset, he's very stirred, rightly or wrongly, that's what he believes is the connection between the two of them. So I don't know how I actually decided to have those two characters, but once I came to them, their relationship became a very interesting and sort of powerful thing to play around with.
They're really complex themes that you explore here, weaving, you know, these shocking stories of violence into this story. It's difficult waters to enter into, especially for a first book. I want you to explore with me why deep trauma is something that you are so interested in wanting to explore.
Yeah, well, I think I like big emotions. Yes, I can make small talk with the best of them. I can read life and light and fluffy, but I actually really am very satisfied by big emotions, by talking about them with people, by reading about them, by watching sort of visual representations of them. I think that's actually where we learn and grow, when we go deep into ourselves and when we go deep with other people. So that's where I started from in my writing. I wanted to do something that really did dig about with complex feelings. And once I decided to do that, I immersed myself into people's stories. I sort of explored experiences. I listened to survivors. And it became more and more, I guess, satisfying is the word. Like, I really felt that if I could get into that space, that if I could really sit in the rubble of those experiences, which aren't mine, I hasten to add, these are not my experiences. So I really was trying to explore other people's experiences. I just felt I could get some... a deep response, a sort of visceral response from readers, which I'm happy to say I have done. So, yes, trauma is painful, and it can be ugly and it can be difficult, but I also truly believe, without sounding like Pollyanna, once you lift up its ugly stone, you can find beauty and life, light and hope, and that's what I've tried to do here.
So tell me about the researching process, because I know you were conscious of not wanting to do long interviews with people who'd experienced this trauma, but equally you needed to step into that experience, which, as you've said, was not one that you've had. How did you do it?
Yeah, well, I used to be a journalist. I'm a former journalist, so sort of my training was always to go to the primary source, you know, cut through all the extras and just get to that primary source. But I actually made the conscious decision for this piece of work to not do that, because I didn't want to take the responsibility of individual stories that are very private, very personal, as to use the word big again, very big stories, and then sort of manipulate and play with those into a work of fiction. I thought that would be at best disrespectful and unsettling, and at worst very triggering. So I wanted an arm's length. And so the way I did that, PK, there is so much open source material nowadays. Thankfully, we live when we do, as opposed to, you know, a few conflicts past, where there is so much material of survivors of the war experience, but of other traumas, telling their stories. So video representations, written material, reports, inquiries. And so I dived into that, and I probably would have listened to and read the accounts, the first-person accounts of hundreds, literally hundreds, I think, survivors and veterans. So I was able to take a huge wealth of experience and sort of distill it down to my characters, as opposed to taking, you know, a handful of one-on-one interviews and trying to play around with those.
Anna is in her 60s and she steps out one lunchtime into this terrorist attack. Why did you want to put an older woman in that situation and explore the story of an older woman? We don't often... focus, do we, on older women in fiction?
Well, I think older women are great. I'm an older woman. And
some of my best friends are older women.
Yeah, that's right. Some people's mothers are. But I think as a demographic, I think older women are great. And I think often, as you say, they are sort of written into the sidelines of sort of, literature and film, et cetera, you know, in the corner with the pikelets or having the nervous breakdown or whatever. I mean, that's a quick generalisation. So I wanted an older woman to be front and centre, and so we could look at how being older actually is a great thing and is an advantage. And it does bring a maturity, and that maturity can bring a wisdom. So, in fact, being an older woman, a grandmother, and her relationship with her grandchild is pivotal to her recovery. How an older woman can draw on her life experience to cope in a different way than a young person. So you've got Nat that really doesn't have the emotional maturity yet. He's a bit of a scattergun. He's, you know, has no idea how to start looking at what's going on in his head and heart. Anna, on the other hand, she's ratty at first, but she is able to pull on her life experience and her understanding of the world and her sense of her place in it to start to move forward in a completely different way. So I wanted to give a stage to that, you know, to older women that can do hard things and do them really well.
On Radio National, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Marion Frith is my guest in the drawing room, and we're talking about her debut novel, Here in the After. Marion, how difficult is it when you're writing a story or a novel to not inadvertently kind of default to your own experiences or your own reactivity or prism and not, you know, fall into those traps?
Yeah, I don't look, as you say, this is my first novel, so I don't know how, you know, far more experienced writers do it. I think you're aware of that. I think by the same token, you know, you start to put your fingers on the keyboard, and of course some of your very self, the essence of who you are and what you've experienced, sort of flow into that. But you're creating a character, and so once you conjure up that character, you find yourself stepping into how they would react. And I think I just brought an awareness that, you know, what I think about things isn't how everybody else thinks about it. It's funny because then when people, you know, read a book that you've written, they're sort of looking for clues, you know, like, oh, do you have a cushion like that? Or did you say that? But I was able to step away and leave myself out of it. There might be a few little clues there, like, you know, I don't know, I like little babies too. But, you know, I think by and large that is the creative process of writing fiction. It's made up, so you make it all up, really.
Yeah, and it's not just all trauma, because you need lightness, don't you, to actually make it a read. And you're really aware of that in terms of getting that balance right, the light and the shade, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, of course I was, to get it right for a reader. But also I am, you know, I think readers are grown-ups. I don't think they need to be spared the reality. I mean, yeah, there's some tough stuff in this, but, you know, no more tough than when you sit down and watch, you know, anything on Netflix tonight, you know, you'll see horrendous stuff in the name of sort of, you know, light fiction. But yeah, but I also think, again, sounding like Pollyanna and not meaning to, I do believe that, you know, trauma and light, you know, dark and light exist side by side, that both things are true, you know, that yes, you will see war footage and it will be against, you know, a magnificent skyscape, or the natural world will stay intact as humans sort of, you know, blast themselves around within it. Do you know what I mean? So I think we do have blackness, we do have trauma, we do have ugliness, and yet the inherent beauty of the world is always there. So I don't think it's a construct to have light and hope. I think they coexist side by side.
You've been a print journalist, as you mentioned, formerly most of your life. You've been a feature writer. You can clearly write. Put simply, just because you're a good writer, though, it doesn't mean you can write a novel. I've also written professionally, but I don't know if I've got the great novel in me. How did you make that?
Every journalist does. Every journalist thinks they have the great novel.
Thinks they do. Thinks is the important word there. How did you get from that space to thinking I'm ready to do this, both mentally and also, I suppose, the skill set?
I knew I wanted to write a novel. I knew I wanted to do that. Yep, like every journalist I know thinks they'd like to write a novel.
I'm not saying I don't want to, Marion. I'm saying, is it in you? But it was in you.
Yeah, and then the time came when I suddenly thought, I am older. Like, if I want to write a novel, if I want to have written a novel, I've got to write it. I've got to sit down and write it. And I'd had the idea, the germ of this for a while. And so then it was literally just a case of making a commitment to myself. And you know, writers talk about showing up to the page. And it was that. I just said, okay, I am going to do this. I am going to start now. And I showed up to the page. So that was the discipline. As for the skill set, as a newspaper journalist, as a print journalist, I was trained to write tight, to write sparingly. I was trained in the days where I was told in a, you know, a noisy, sexist, battery old newsroom that you had to imagine that every word cost a dollar and you needed to write as economically, save as much word money as you could. So I can write very tight. And in fact, I think writing tight is quite harder sometimes than writing long. And so the challenge for me was to breathe out, and let the words come. So they didn't just have to open the door. They could, you know, walk up to the door and touch the brass handle and, you know, look at the red colour. So it was putting all that layer back in that I'd been trained to take out. So, yeah, that was a bit of a challenge, I have to say. But once I did it, I loved it.
COVID. I know you've noticed it.
Yeah.
The pandemic hit as you were both writing and releasing this novel. What impact has it had?
Oh, I think in the great scheme of COVID tragedies, it's probably a very minor one, but in a small world of a debut novelist, it's annoying because, of course, you want to release your novel to real people. You know, you want to have a launch, you want to have a party, you want to be at bookshops, you want to be talking to readers, and, of course, you can't do any of that. So, so that was a shame. You sort of just release your book out into the sort of the digital ether, it feels like. But like everything with COVID, there's sort of, you know, there's pivots and compensations. And so I've been able to do a lot of that online instead. You know, I've had wonderful opportunities to sort of speak to people and events. But, yeah, it has an impact. And so when the lockdown finally ended, it was really great to sort of, you know, be very gawkish and sort of go into a bookshop and there's my real book on a shelf. So,
It must feel like putting this book out into the world now at this time, it's such a difficult time. In fact, you know, some of the trauma that you've actually referred to, there is a sort of certain sense of trauma that we're all experiencing, right?
Yeah, there is a real sense of trauma, and I've been really touched by people, readers who have contacted me and said, I have not been through those experiences. I've not been through those two experiences that your characters have, but this has deeply touched my own trauma, you know, my own private trauma. It has helped me sort of access it, if you like, and grieve for it. And I found that really humbling. You know, that's really lovely. I mean, it's really lovely to think that that's touched somebody like that, because both these characters, you know, they try really hard and it's very moving how hard they try. And that's been really affirming. But also, you know, we're now in a separate, you know, vein of thought. We're also moving now here in Australia. You know, we're having the Royal Commission into veteran suicide. So huge trauma within the veteran community and their families. So, yeah, it's ever present. The trauma that I've tried to represent in this novel is ever present in all sorts of ways.
What do you want readers to take away from Here in the After?
I want them to take away, I suppose, a sense of empathy. I would like to think you would put this book down and go, wow, I actually had no idea that could feel like that. I have no idea actually what that person, you know, sitting beside me on the bus might have been through. I have no, you know, why that person at work is really grouchy, why that person acts like that. You know, I'd like to think that's what you'd get out of it, that it would just cause you to reflect on the private experiences of people, you know, because both these characters presented very well in the wider world. You know, they step out into the world and they presented well. It was in their private lives and within their families that, you know, the cracks were really, really evident. So, yeah, I guess that's what I'd like.
Marion, for all of the would-be novelists listening, how hard is it to write your first novel? Did you find it torturous? Or?
Yes, I found it really, really hard and really, really unpleasant. Like it was really hard. And I say that laughing because it was really hard. But there were some moments that were just wonderful. You know, when I felt I got something right, you know, when I'd... So there were moments of glory, but it was a very hard process. In fact, my partner said to me at one point, you know, when I thought I was trying to do an edit, you know, I thought this was meant to be fun. And I was like, are you kidding? You know, I've never heard anybody say it's fun. So it was not fun, but it was immensely satisfying in the end when I finally got that printed book back from the publisher in the box. But, no, it was really hard. I walk into a bookshop now. I was at the airport the other day going, wow, every single person has every single book here has been birthed by a person. I don't know how they did it.
But they did. So have you got another book in you, Marion?
Yes, because I like to suffer. I do. I'm going to try again.
I'm really glad to hear it. Marion, you've been a delightful guest. Thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Marion Frith has been my guest in The Drawing Room. Her debut novel, Here in the After, is out now through HarperCollins.